with you. Do we have any extras for those that that didn't have them? Got some back there? Got a few. If you don't have a handout, let's get a few of them out back there, and we'll go ahead and finish this material up. We're talking about the laws of review today, and the seven laws of teaching. This is the first major section in a series that we're dealing with in this Sunday school class on influencing people. Remember, we are responsible to influence two groups of people. Who are they? Our children. We have to learn how to influence our children. Don't have any options on that. Who's the second group that we have to influence? The lost. We have to know how to influence lost people. Now, the next thing that we're going to get into is going to deal with different world views. Okay? Different world views. Now, what do we mean by a world view? Anybody here got an idea what that might mean? What is a world view? Okay? Well, that's part of it. Yeah, an attitude, but it means more than that. That's you're not wrong, but you're not complete. Let's go ahead and get some other comments. What did she say? She said it's the attitude of the masses of the people toward a particular subject or something like that. Okay, yes, sir.
Your basic philosophical presuppositions.
Yeah, your basic philosophical presuppositions. Now, what does that mean? Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, your foundational beliefs on which all your other beliefs are made. All right, let's keep stabbing at it. See if we can come up with a sentence that'll really clarify it and crystallize it. What is a worldview? What is your worldview? Yes. It determines how you interpret the facts and information that you receive. Okay. Anybody else have an idea? Would you like to share? What is your worldview? How about this one? It's how you view the world. Okay? Isn't that what it is? Okay? Yeah. It's how you see things. It's how you think things are. All right? Now, we would have a worldview which is characterized by a belief in a creator. God made the world. Therefore, he gets to do with it what he wants to. Right? Okay? Now, there are some people today who don't believe that. In fact, the great majority of people today do not believe that God created the world. They are what we call materialists. What is a materialist? What is materialism in philosophy? Okay? Right. All there is the material physical world. People who say, well, he's so materialistic, they think he wants a lot of material. Well, that is the end result of materialism. If you believe that physical matter is all that there is, you're going to desire as much of it as you can because that's the only reality. You see? The physical material world. God didn't make it. We're not responsible to him. Therefore, we get to do what we want to do. That is the worldview of most people today. Most Americans are materialists. But there are some other worldviews. There's the worldview of what we call dualism, and we're going to understand what that is. And then there's the worldview that's called monism. Dualism says there's a spirit realm and a physical realm. And there are two different kinds of dualism. Western religions have typically said that the spirit realm is more significant and important than the physical realm. Eastern religions, you know what I mean by that? Far Eastern religions, Hinduism, Buddhism, things like that, have typically said that the physical realm controls the spirit realm. That is taking its effect, or having an effect, on the communication of our society today. A lot of people today believe that you can physically manipulate the spirit realm. You see? We call that the occult, basically. And then there's monism. There's certain types of Eastern religions that believe there is no difference between the physical and spiritual. They're all the same. We'll talk about that a little bit. I think it's important for you to know that. I really do. I'm going to tell you why in just a few minutes. Okay? You remind me. If I don't tell you why, I think that's important. You be coming up with a reason why you think it's important while we finish this material up here. What we're talking about is the law of review. And I think we got down here to the practical rules for review, didn't we? All right, we were talking about practical rules for review, and we said that one of the things, if you're teaching something to your children, or if you're teaching something to a Sunday school class, or in any environment in which you find yourself where you're teaching, remember this, that reviews are always in order. Reviews are always in order. You know that's true because we've been reviewing in this session, right in this class right here. We've been studying this most of the year, and we have found that every time we review, even though we have a general impression, we really don't have a working knowledge yet of the seven laws of teaching. I'm going to ask you to do something here in just a few minutes, and I want to show you why this is important. Okay? I want to show you why it's important. Now, stay with me. A second thing, at the beginning of each period, review briefly the preceding lesson. Almost every good lesson closes with a summary. Now, one of the things I've been doing for the last two or three lessons that we've had is I've been kind of leading you into the next thing that we're going to be talking about and then going back and reviewing what we've been talking about before. Why are we doing that? Which law of teaching requires us to do this? Who can tell me? Okay? The law of the lesson. What does the law of the lesson say? Everything that you learn has to be built on something that you already know. Apply that to soul winning. If you're trying to lead somebody to Christ, why or how would you apply that principle when you were soul winning? All right?
Unless you know that you're a sinner, you have no need of a Savior.
Okay, but at the same time, I'm talking about method now. In other words, as you're soul winning, as you're witnessing to somebody, how do you apply this principle right here?
You have to find out where the person is in their understanding.
All right. Find out where the person is in their understanding that you're... All right, suppose, for example, this is somebody that you've talked to three or four times now. Okay? Now you're going up to see them the fourth time. How do you know what to talk about? What did you talk about last time? And what questions were unanswered? I am convinced that the reason we don't win more souls is because we have reduced our soul winning to a method that none of us has much confidence in, and we're not willing to pay the price of repeated visits. Okay? Now, you know, you can find out real quick why you're soul winning by asking yourselves how many times you're willing to go back to the same house. How many of you in here have led a soul to Christ? The first time you went to the house, you talked to them about the Lord, you led them to the Lord, they came to church, they got baptized, and they went on for God. How many of you in here have done that? Two. Three. Okay? And I have. That's four. Okay? Four people in here have led a soul to Christ. If, however, I were to ask you what soul winning is, how many of you in here would believe that soul winning is going to somebody's house, leading them to Christ, and having them come to church? How many of you would say, well, yeah, that's soul winning? Huh? Well, you might have. Yeah, sure. If you were to talk, well, we're going to really get our visitation going. Isn't that what you would define it? Now, how many of you have led a soul to Christ where you have gone back to their house more than once or even many times in order to lead them to Christ, and you got them saved? Okay. More people have done that. How many have led somebody to Christ that you've known for a long time, have regular contact with, and many, many opportunities in order to lead them to Christ? Okay, probably even more people. Now, my point is this. The answer to that is not for us to say, therefore, I'm never going to go to anybody's house to win them to Christ. That's not the answer. The answer is, if you find somebody who's willing to listen to the gospel, keep going. Keep going. We have people say, every time we get excited about soul winning and visitation, somebody says, all right, I'm going to show up. I'm going to come on Thursday night. And they come with this idea that you've got to give them a hot prospect card, and they're going to go out to this house, and boy, if they don't win that person that Thursday night, well, come back, well, hey, that wasn't any good. Give me another one next Thursday night. And they come for 4 or 5 weeks, and they keep going out to these houses, and nothing is happening, and they say, forget this. I'm not going to do this anymore. Now, isn't that the way it happens a lot of times? Let me give you a better suggestion. If you can keep going back to that same house, or if you have a friend that you can go see, say, now look, this Thursday night I'm going to stop by. And just make it a regular thing. Get together and have prayer with your friends before you go. go to that person's house and keep going back as long as they'll let you. Now somebody says, well, you know, I think, you know, that's not right. Nobody has the right to hear twice until everybody's heard once. You show me where that is in the Bible. That's one of those little cliches that people use to get, you know, folks to go to the mission field. But it doesn't get the job done. If you've got somebody that'll listen to you, keep talking to them. Keep talking to them about the Lord. This principle right here says that you've got to review and you've got to explain over and over and over. Yes? Yeah. Somebody kept coming back? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just keep working. Just keep chipping. That, listen, that'll work, folks. Hank? Good point. That's a good point. That's an excellent point. Listen, there's an awful lot of people would get out of what they're in now if they thought they had a place to go. I know a lot of Southern Baptist preachers like that. They'd like to get out of the convention, but they know they're going to get rejected by the convention. They know the independent guys don't want to have anything to do with them. You know? They don't have a place to go. If you, again, the idea is not to let a person think that you condone or approve of or encourage his sin, but that you love him and that you're concerned about him. Same thing's true with your children. You know, listen, parents who discipline their children sometimes actually seem to believe that telling a child something is the same as teaching that child something. We've been talking about this all year. Now, let me ask you, have you been making practical applications at home with your children? You know, I mean, have you heard yourself saying things like, haven't I told you? You know? Well, he knows you've been telling him, and you know you've been telling him. But are you teaching him? Are you teaching him? Every time I see Marco, I've been trying to teach Marco to use his electric arm. You know, for months, he wouldn't want to wear it. He didn't want to use it because he didn't know how to use it. He didn't want to use it because he couldn't do anything with it. So I said, we're going to get this thing fixed. So we got it trimmed down to where it would fit him better. I taught him how to keep a fresh battery in it all the time. Taught him how to make sure the batteries would be charged up. And every time I see him, first thing I say to him, hey, Marco, how you doing? Is your arm turned on? He developed a bad habit of turning it off because he's afraid he's going to run the battery down. I don't know who told him that. But what that does is it's going to break the switch and it's going to cause the battery to go down dead sooner. So I've been teaching him to keep it on. Now, if it's turned on, he's more likely to use it. He's learned to do all kinds of neat things with it. He uses it when he eats now and all kinds of stuff. And every time I catch him with it turned on, he makes it sit in a chair for 10 minutes. Marco, is your hand turned on? No. Okay, give me 10. And while you're sitting there, I want you to think about why you should keep your hand on. Okay? He came in this morning. Pastor, will you button my shirt? No, I will not. Yeah, but I got to get my shirt. But go find your button hook. Button it yourself. So you're mean. No, not mean. Going around the rest of his life with somebody buttoning his shirt? Kid's 17 years old. He's got a little thing. All he's got to do is just put it through the buttonhole and hook it around a button and pull it right out. You know, it works. You see, listen, something about human nature. If kids can get you to do it for them, they will. Have you noticed that? If you don't have any kids yet, you're going to learn that one of these days. So you got to make them do it. Teach them. And after a while, it can become a fun thing. Sometimes Mark will come to me, hey, Pastor, oh, never mind. He'll say, I'll go do it. He'll say, because he knows what I'm going to say to him. I've taught him at least one thing, and that is, don't ask me to do it, unless you want me to make you find a project. I've told you this before, you know, where the kids come up and they say, you know, I'm bored. I don't have anything to do. I've taught my kids not to say that to me. Bored? You don't have anything to do? I'll go find something, they say. Because they know I'll find something for them. Now, in other words, teaching kids, reinforcing, back and forth, learning, those kinds of things right there are so important. Working with them. And it can be a fun thing. But you have to review. You have to remind them of what you taught before. Behavior is repetitive if you're going to change it. Yes? He's hungry. He's developed an appetite. He's getting a taste for the things of the Word of God. That's soul winning. That's what that is. That's what that is. Now, again, don't misunderstand me. When I say that soul winning is not just a guerrilla raid, I do not mean that we should never, ever go knock on doors and try to lead people to Christ. I am for that. Okay? But that's not all soul winning is. Soul winning is discipling people. And it takes time to do that. If you go knock on somebody's door and they show an interest, listen, I am convinced that a lot of Christian people are wanting to go knock on a door, lead a soul to Christ, so they can come back and tell everybody they did, and then not go back anymore. And that's wrong. It's wrong. We need to keep working with these people, and sometimes you'll have an opportunity to lead a soul to Christ, and then it'll be a while before you'll get them in church. But keep contact with them and keep working with them and keep leading and keep teaching and keep reviewing. It's always appropriate. Every time you see a person, try to go back and make contact with what you talked about before. Yes, sir? A little louder. Yeah, there you go. And that's what we're talking about there. The test of your love, maybe, would be is what it would take to stop you. Sure. So if you've got somebody who will listen, just keep teaching. Keep working with them. Keep taking some time. Keep moving on in that direction. All right? The best teachers give about one-third of each period to the purpose of review. Haste slowly, but progress surely. Listen, that is important. One of the reasons we've been having the pace that we have in this class is because it is essential that you get this material. It is essential. Now, I know some of you are coming in and you're thinking, oh, when are we going to get on to something else? I know. We're going to get on to something when you get this. It is essential that we get this. We've got to have it. You know what a lot of people want when they come to church? They want fascinating teaching to scratch their itching ears. Listen, fundamental Christian people love it when a Bible expositor gets up and dazzles them with his exposition. People in this church love it when the pastor gets up, gives them something that's fascinating, exciting, motivating, captivating. You can think of your own adjectives, which they can't remember past Tuesday. Huh? Don't they? Don't you love to go hear good... I've had people say, oh, what a service. What did he preach on? Well, I don't remember. Man, but it was good. Now, what is that? What did you enjoy about that? What you learned? Yes, sir. Yeah, the experience. We criticize the charismatics for wanting to go have an experience. But you know what fundamentalists like to experience? Something that's mentally stimulating for a brief time. That does not change your life. Something that excites you and thrills you and motivates you for a little while doesn't change your life. If you can't remember it, it's not going to have an effect on you. Yes, sir? It's entertainment. Amusement. You know what the word amuse means? The word muse means to think. Ah, the alpha privative in the Greek language is the negative form of that. So amuse means to not think. People like to come and be amused. Sure. All right. You may not make a whole lot of progress, but you're at least making some. All right. Then you find as many applications as possible. That's what we're doing this morning. We're trying to make some applications to these seven laws of teaching. Now, before we go through the seven principles again and finish up, I want you to give me some applications. I want to hear at least five of them real quick. Real quick. We had one a minute ago. Rich Sidney gave us one. He said, at work, I've been applying these seven laws of teaching to a fella at work, and he's now listening to WMUU, and he's interested in the Bible, and he's reading Genesis. There is an application of how we've been taking these things. Now, I want to hear five more real quick. Okay, Fran? Okay. So here's a brother that she hadn't been in contact with for a long time, and she's continuing to work with him, patiently teaching, and he's starting to show a little bit of interest. All right, yes, sir. I've read that tract. That tract is very gracious, by the way, to fundamentalists. Yeah. So he's. Good. Yeah, but hey, there's a channel. Okay? Now, I don't recommend necessarily that you get into one of these contests with a Jehovah's Witness or somebody where, you know, I'll read your book if you'll read my book. I mean, you know, or a Mormon or something like that. Because you know, don't forget that theirs is not true and yours is. I mean, I know they're told the same thing, but they're wrong. Okay, so be very careful when you get into that kind of thing. But hey, there's an open channel. Here's a guy that responded. I had that happen one time. I had a lady call me on the phone. I put a gospel tract in a bill, and the clerk that processed it, you know, they opened the letter. Somebody's got to do that. That's the person that gets it. And it was a Becky tract. And this lady had opened the bill and processed the check and all that kind of thing. And you know, by the way, if you're going to put gospel tracts in your bills, pay them on time, okay? But, you know, get them there on time. I mean, really, I mean, that's as bad as you know, evangelistic bumper stickers, you know, that the policeman gets to read while he's giving you a ticket or something. I mean, you know, folks, you know, really. So get them there on time and pay your bill and everything. But so here I put the thing in there, and this lady calls me up. You know, she said, you put a little, she says, I'm a clerk at so-and-so. And she says, and I got this little paper, and I want to talk to you about this for a few minutes. And I had a tremendous opportunity to witness this person. And I mean, I was going to pray. I thought, yeah, she called me. I'm going to leave this lady, the Lord, right here on the phone. Well, then she says, well, look, you know, I've really got to go right now. But I really appreciate that. And I tried to get her name, but she didn't want to tell me. And I mean, you know, you can't really call back, you know, down at Duke Power or wherever and say, you know, I'd like to talk to whoever processes the checks or something like that. So, but she never called me back. But that was interesting that she called me that once. And I've been doing that for years and years, but that's an exciting opportunity. All right, there's a couple of illustrations. Let's hear some more. Some applications of how the principles of the seven laws of teaching will help you or have helped you in your work with your children or influencing the lost. Yes, sir. Excellent, excellent. I do that with the police officers all the time. If I'm riding one of the police officers, some of you new folks are visitors, I'm the chaplain of the police department, and I have a lot of opportunities to work with the police officers. And they'll ask me a question about practical matters. And inevitably, you can find a Bible principle to use for an answer. And I'll say, well, you know, like it says in Proverbs, boom. Now, what have you done? You've gotten the Word. The Word is what changes people. And that's the salty influence of Christianity right there. Somebody will ask you a question, and you don't have to jump down their throat and preach at them. Now, if it's appropriate, do it. Okay? But a lot of times, just be careful. Say, well, you know, here, let me tell you what the Bible says. The Bible says so-and-so. You know? And, that, you know, here, well, here's what the Bible says. Or say, well, let me share this principle with you. I've done this before where I say, well, let me tell you about this. And I'll quote a verse of Scripture, and somebody will say, well, man, that's good. I say, that's from the Bible. Really? A lot of people will tell you they know the Bible when they really don't know the Bible. A lot of lost people will say this. They heard that somewhere. You know, I've read through the whole Bible, and I found it full of contradictions. Well, there's a contradiction right there. I don't believe lost people when they tell me that. Most Christians haven't read through the Bible. Now, if most Christians haven't read through the Bible, why is a lost guy going to read through the Bible? I don't believe that. But they say that because they heard some teacher say that someplace, and it sounds, you know, credible. It's like this guy said, well, you know, the Bible's full of contradictions. They heard somebody that sounded like he knew what he was talking about. It said that, and they believed it. Now, you already know something about a person who makes a statement like that. What's that? What do you know about a person who says the Bible's full of contradictions? What do you know about them that's positive that will help you win them to the Lord? Well, they are, but that's not positive, though. Well, they're lost. Yeah, but what do you know about them that's positive that will help you win them to the Lord? They have faith in somebody. They have faith in somebody they trust. Isn't that true? So when somebody says the Bible's full of contradictions, you know they have the ability to put faith in somebody they trust. Or they wouldn't say that because it isn't true and they haven't proved it. They have put their faith in somebody they trust. So whenever you hear something like that, that ought to be an encouragement to you to know that that person has the ability to put faith in somebody they trust. Now you teach them to trust the Lord and they'll put their faith in the Lord maybe. You see what I'm saying? You see how this our thinking can change if we'll learn to listen? Yes. They're not listening to the right person. That's right. That's right. They're not listening to the right person. See, everybody has faith. Somebody says, well, you know, I don't believe in a creator. I believe we evolved. What do you know about that guy that's positive that'll help you win him for the Lord? He has faith in something. doesn't he? Why does he believe in creation? What is his basis for that? Intellectual integrity? No, you don't believe in evolution by the scientific method. You believe in evolution by faith. He accepts it because it makes sense to him. He knows more about that than he does about creation. He's been taught more about that. Now the guy says, I don't believe in nothing. You know, in the first place, I don't believe he does, but he's got such an attitude, you've got to concentrate on his attitude. But you don't meet many people like that. Everybody believes something. And if you can find out why they believe what they believe and present the Bible truth in its place, a lot of times that person is giving you the key to answering them. A lawyer taught me this one time. He said, whenever you lose a case, if you listen to the judge, he'll tell you how to win the appeal. Now hear me. He said, if you ever lose a case, if you'll listen to the judge, he'll tell you how to win the appeal. Because when you get beat in the case, he'll tell you why you lost. Because of this, because of that, because of this, here's the judgment. And the lawyer says, all right, make a note of those things. Next time we come around, that's what we concentrate on. And that's how you win the appeal. I learned that in debate. If you ever lose a debate, they'll tell you at the end of the debate, I gave it to the other team because of 1, 2, 3, 4. Fine. Next time I get up in front of that judge, I concentrate on those things. Same thing's true with the lost guy. If you'll listen to the lost man that you're witnessing to, he'll tell you why he's not buying what you're selling. If you'll listen to your children. Now, sometimes you can tell whether they're making excuses or whether it's a legitimate reason. Joey was late for Sunday school this morning. He spent a half an hour up in his room this morning trying to make his bed up like John made it up yesterday. Now, John's real tall, and he's got big, long arms, and he can reach in. And all the covers were tucked in real good. We had all the deacons and their wives over yesterday, and so everybody pitched in and helped clean up the house. And Joey really liked the way John made his bed up. Well, Joey was late for Sunday school this morning because he spent 30 minutes trying to make his bed up like it looked yesterday, which was better than it's ever looked. Okay? Now, how are you going to respond to that? Kids going to be late for Sunday school, right? That's a moral issue, right? I mean, you got to be to Sunday school on time, right? I mean, right? You do, don't you? And if the kid's late for Sunday school and hasn't gotten down there to eat his breakfast, doesn't have his shoes and socks on, and he's been up in his room doing something other than getting to church on time, what are you going to do about it? Yeah, find out why. And beat the daylights out of him, right? Well, what are you going to do about that? Now, come on, we're good fundamentalists. We know what to do when the kid's late for Sunday school and he's not ready on time. What do you do? Oh, when? In other words, you see, here's what to do. Everybody says, well, my duties don't conflict, right? Duties don't conflict. Mom, Dad got to get to Sunday school on time, right? Now, this problem here, I mean, you know, listen, this is wrong. This is a moral issue here. Now, right? We're going to deal with this problem. Make him go to Sunday school, get him over there without his shoes and socks. Well, how are you going to deal with something like that? Bernie? You had your hand up?
I did.
That's right. That's right. Now, suppose while you're doing that, it makes you late. Now what are you going to do? Huh? Check your priorities. I don't know about you, but I'm going to be late. Okay? Now, I wasn't late, but my wife is late. Because she's home doing what she could have been doing while she was teaching Joe this very important principle. Sitting down there with him on the couch, having a serious talk with him. And he did get spanked this morning. Not over that, over something else. Okay? But he was just kind of having a tough morning. But that particular issue, she had to sit down and look. She, you know, now here we are in Sunday school this morning teaching the seven laws of teaching. And my wife is at home practicing them right now. You understand what I'm saying? Now, I'd like for her to be here. Just like I'd like for you to be here. But let's be careful that we don't get so legalistic in things that we end up not practicing what we're talking about. You follow what I'm saying? Okay? The point I'm making here is that you got to review and you got to teach and you got to work with them. Now, I understand, and I know next Sunday, you know, probably half of you will be absent. Don't misunderstand me. Don't misunderstand me here. Okay? We got to sit down and we got to talk with them and we got to teach while we can. And then we got to explain to them. And I know it's like the guy said, well, you know, if the ox is in the ditch, you know, you got to get him out, right? Right. The same ox gets in the same ditch every Sunday, you know, you can fill it in the ditch or sell the ox. Okay? Don't use that same excuse over and over and over. I saw a hand, yes. That's right. Teach it. Make it a lesson. Make it a lesson. You know, sometimes we are so committed to our agenda that we miss the opportunities that we could have. It has to be an interaction. Have to listen. I'm convinced one of the ways the devil defeats us is by keeping us running around so frantically today that we never really have time to communicate the ideas. We have also, listen, one of the things that the big church syndrome of the 70s has done to all of us as individuals is caused us to believe that we're not doing anything for God unless we are running around madly influencing millions. And because we're running around madly trying to influence the masses, we're not influencing anybody. I'd rather take a decade to influence one person whose life would really be different as a result of it than to spend that same decade dazzling 500,000 people who never change. You see? Yes, sir?
I'm just thinking it's dad and mom.
Hey, that's right. That's right. In fact, you hit it right on the head right there. You know, in other words, you see, if we hadn't taken the time necessary to talk with him this morning, we'd have missed the whole point. He wanted to get that bed right, not just so he could enjoy it, but he really wants to do what we want him to do. See? Now, if we'd come down there and blasted him away for missing the point of being ready, yes, we wanted to be ready for Sunday school on time. We wanted to be down there for breakfast when he's supposed to be. But we also wanted to get his bed made. And he was doing what he was doing for the very reasons that we wanted to be doing it. And sometimes we miss that. And I'll guarantee you that is the best way I know of to wound a spirit and drive a person away from the Lord. When I was witnessing old Bob Nowoski, Bob's dead now. He got killed in a plane crash. But I led Bob to the Lord after we got back from Thailand. Bob was the fellow who was on my crew when we were in Thailand. I kicked him off my crew because he was uncooperative. And the guy that replaced him was this fellow from Nicaragua that witnessed to me on duty. You heard my testimony. Okay? And Gary, the fellow off duty, was the guy that actually led me to Christ. But when we got back to the States, Bob was on my crew again, and I started witnessing to Bob. Well, it was about 2-3 months later when I finally led him to the Lord. Bob went to a fundamental church and just did a lot of things before he got killed. And in fact, the Bible that I preached with the first 4 or 5 years I was pastor here, Bob brought it to me in December of 75, when after I came to Greenville, and then shortly after that he was killed in a plane crash. But at any rate, Bob, what I was witnessing to him, and he knew I'd gotten saved. He saw the difference in my life. And so he was respectful of spiritual things. And Bob would come to me and he said, hey, John, he said, I went to see this movie. It was a religious movie. And I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, it was really interesting. He said, it was about a lot of this stuff that you've been talking about. I said, well, Bob, what was the name of it? He said, it was called The Exorcist. Now, you got to understand, Bob. I mean, this guy's brain was fried with drugs. I mean, he'd been taking drugs for years. And here he's telling me that. And he thought, I mean, what was he doing? He was saying, hey, I'm really interested in what you've been telling me about. In fact, I went to see a movie that was about the same thing. Now, suppose I had launched into the typical independent fundamental Baptist position on Hollywood movies, which I still hold, by the way. Now, he probably wouldn't want to share with me the next day about his particular blessing. But the poor guy thought he was moving in the right direction. And the truth is, he was. So I said to him very graciously, I said, well, Bob, you know, what'd you learn? You know, what'd you learn from it? But that was really something. See, he was wanting to share. But sometimes, you know, when kids come up and they show you their little picture, you can't even tell what it is. You watch sometimes. I'll be standing back there by that door, and the little kids will come back, and they'll say, Pastor, this is for you. Now, how would I be if I said, well, is that supposed to be me? You know, the arms are awful short. My nose isn't that big. Hey, the pulpit's not red. I mean, if I were to start giving those kinds of responses, You think they'd bring their pictures to me? No way. But isn't that what we do sometimes when we're trying to lead somebody to Christ or when we're working with our kids? You know, we gotta go beyond sometimes. I mean, if the little kid goes out and he slogs through the mud trying to pick up stuff, trying to pick up the papers and stuff out of the front yard, let's try to realize what he was doing. He was trying to pick up the paper. He wasn't trying to track in a bunch of mud. You see? Let's notice the good parts and accentuate that and move forward on those things rather than concentrate. Yeah, well, yeah, but so-and-so. That's the point. Review, find all these applications to move him forward. Yes? The law of the learner. When he's paying attention. Yeah, and also the commonness of the language. All right, now we need two more applications, okay? Time's almost gone. Yes? Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. That's the principle of leaving the 90 and 9 and going to find the one. In other words, you got to reach the reachable person. You got to reach the reachable person and teach the teachable person. Okay? All right, let's just flip through these real quick now. This is just the statements. The seven laws of teaching involve these seven elements. Here it is. One last review. Next Sunday, we're going to move on to something else. First, the true teacher equipped with the knowledge he wishes to communicate. That's one of the things you have to have. The true teacher equipped with the knowledge he wishes to communicate. What is the law? What's the law of the teacher based on that one? The teacher must know the lesson that he would teach. Okay? You can't teach something if you don't know it. By how? How? By intuition? By experience. Okay? Second, the pupil with attention fixed and interest aroused, eager to pursue his studies. That's the second thing you need. What's the law of the law of the learner? The learner must attend with interest the material to be taught. That's the law of the learner. Number three, the true medium of communication between the two, a language clear, simple, and easily understood by both. What's the law of the language? Number three, the language must be what? Common to both. It must mean the same thing to both people. Must mean the same thing to both the teacher and the learner. Fourth, the true lesson, the knowledge or experience to be communicated. What's the law of the lesson? What's the law of the lesson say? The truth taught must be based on truth that's already known. The truth that is to be taught must be based on truth that is already known. That is becoming increasingly important. And here is why. Hear me. Here is why we're going to study worldviews next. Remember I told you that at the beginning of the session? This is why we're going to study worldviews next. One of the big problems with Christian people today is they don't know how lost people think. And because they don't know how lost people think, they don't know how to teach them truth. Most of the soul-winning methods that are promoted in aggressive soul-winning churches today are based on a presupposition that everybody believes the Bible, but just doesn't know what's in it. That is not true anymore. Most people today not only do not know what's in the Bible, but they believe the Bible is not true. Okay? Now, you and I believe the Bible is true. And it's still living. Whether they believe it or not, it's still true. But we have to start at the very beginning. In the beginning, God created. And we have to start with that worldview that God is the creator and move from that. And I'll explain that to you in the weeks ahead. I'll try anyway. All right? So, the lesson has to be based on truth that is already known. Fifth, the true teaching process, the teacher arousing and directing the self-activities of the pupil. What is the law of the teaching process? Somebody tell me. We spent 3 weeks on it. The law of the teaching process. Who knows it? All right. Arouse his self-interest and as a general rule, do what? As a general rule, tell him what? Oh, boy. Okay, thank you. Tell him nothing that he can discover for himself. I see you all know this stuff. You just want to tell me, do you? Okay? Make him a discoverer of truth, and as a general rule, tell him nothing he can discover for himself. Six, the true learning process. The pupils reproducing in their own thoughts, step by step, first in mere outline, and finally in full and finished conception, the lesson to be learned. What's the law? That's the teaching process. What's the law of the learning process? Who remembers it? How is a person learning? What does a pupil do? It's in there. No, it's, yeah, that may be true. That may be true. But the thing about it is, the statement of the laws becomes more complex. It's easier to learn a few truths about a thing than it is to learn a lot of truths about a thing. Okay? That may be part of it. It may be true because we had more review at the beginning. It's also true because the first few laws required less knowledge. I'm convinced that the reason more people start college than finish college, more people start school than finish school, more people start everything than finish everything, is because as you go on through any discipline in life, the requirements get tougher. It's easier to learn the first two or three principles about anything than it is to learn all the principles about anything. And here's a perfect illustration of it. It may be because we reviewed the first few, but it's also true that these last few require more of us. They require more of us. Another principle of human nature is that when we've learned the first few things about a thing, we've satisfied our curiosity and we've learned all we want to know about it. More people graduate from undergrad school than graduate from grad school. Isn't that true in life? It may be that I haven't been successful in applying these seven laws myself in helping you to learn the last three laws. But it's also true that the last three are but combinations of the first four. Okay? And if you know the first four, you really know the last three. Okay? Because if you know this one, you know that one. This one says the teaching process is to arouse in his interest and cause him to learn what he knows already. And this one right here says that the learning process is reproducing in his own mind the truth to be learned, which is just the restatement of that same thing. These processes grew out of these other truths up here. And the last one, of course, is the law of review. That's the test, the fixing, the correcting, the completing, connecting, confirming, and so on, applying the subject to be learned. I saw a hand back here. Somebody had a hand up? Nope. Okay. I think you got it. Anybody here think he doesn't have it? Now, let me make a recommendation to you. If you really want to learn this better than you've got it now, anybody here want to learn this better than you got it now? Go get the book. Okay, hey, I got my other copy of the book back this week that I've had for several years and somebody else has had for several years. Okay, and they brought it back to me this week when we got finished with it. I have two copies of it now. If you want to borrow one of mine, if you can't afford it, come and sign your name and you can borrow one of my copies. The Seven Laws of Teaching by John Milton Gregory. A Baptist preacher wrote the book in the 1850s. It's a tremendous principle based on Bible principles. We're going to move on to some other things. Now, if you really want to master these principles of teaching to use in influencing others, let me make a recommendation. Start looking for illustrations of them in your daily life. Start looking for illustrations. Now, we've spent too long on this. That's another reason. It's hard to learn stuff after a while. You know, a review doesn't become a fulfilling experience if it's stretched out over too long a period of time. I mean, you can only eat leftovers for so long. Okay? Next week, we're going to start talking about worldviews. And if you want to read some books, I'll give you some lists of books that you can read in conjunction with that. But I want you to be thinking yourself about the worldviews of the people around you. How do they see the world? Be watching for it. Wherever you see it, in the newspaper, think of illustrations. If you could bring in here some illustrations from either the newspaper or from a magazine or from some other resource next week, bring something with you that will help us to see a different worldview that is commonly held other than the worldview that we hold, believing in God, believing in the Word of God. Okay? See if you can bring in an illustration of that next week. All right, let's stand and be dismissed in prayer. Father, thank you now for the opportunity to have spent some time going over this material together. And Lord, even though it seems to have been somewhat repetitious and dry here near the end, I pray that you'd cause us to realize the applications in our lives of thinking differently and relating differently as a result of spending all this time on this material. Lord, when we work with our children, when we work with the lost, I pray that our hearts would be attuned to see and hear these truths so that we might master them and be effective teachers and influencers of our children and of the lost. Lord, as we continue now by looking into some other things here in the days and weeks ahead, I pray that we would really be open to learn what you want us to know. In Jesus' name.